Hello, I'm Joan. I'm a Canadian family physician who also works as a restorative medical educator, facilitator, and coach. I create spaces that rehumanize the work of healthcare. I'm creating this podcast to remind myself, as well as anyone else working in a helping profession, that when you are working and caring for your human patients, you are the other human in the room. Hello there, healthcare humans. Thank you so much for coming back for another episode of The Other Human in the Room. And if you can't tell by all the clicking and rooming background noise, I am, once again, the only human in this van, driving away from my clinic as we speak on a Friday afternoon and driving to go pick up my kids and start having a weekend. So obviously, what should I do with my drive home but record a podcast? I haven't been doing as many of these as you noticed if you listen to this show a lot, but I felt really inspired to do one, and it was just like coming to me, and I was feeling like I wanted to write notes about it, and I thought, well, I can't write notes as I drive. Why not just record the thing while I'm driving? So the inspiration for this podcast is a phrase that I've heard a zillion times. I actually don't know the first time I heard it, and I'm not sure anything like about the origin of the phrase and that sort of thing. And the phrase that I want to be the topic of this podcast is "the dose makes the poison." Have you heard that phrase? The place I most have heard it has been in sort of like, you could call it science education spaces, especially in the context of offering an alternative explanation and context graying, you could say, in relationship to folks online, typically, who say like, this chemical is evil or bad, this chemical is poison. You know, like there's sort of whole swaths of, not just the internet, of course, but swaths of thought that are, it's one word people use is like chemophobic, like, you can't eat certain foods because of the chemicals they have in them, certain pesticides, whatever, like, you know, that sort of thing. And so then other folks, hopefully in a kind and non-condescending way, though sometimes in a condescending way, one of the things that tries to offer an alternative perspective is saying, well, everything is made of chemicals, because everything is. And it's not that a certain chemical is or is not poisonous. It's the dose of that chemical or of that substance that either makes it poisonous or not to an individual, that makes it harmful or not to an individual, right? That even varies depending on the individual. That's why we have different doses for babies than we do for adults. So a baby dose in an adult would be insufficient, and an adult dose in a baby, even though it's therapeutic in an adult, would be potentially, depending on the medicine, dangerous, toxic, lethal, like literally poisonous to a baby. Like, that's why we change the dose based on the context, right? So the reason I bring it up is not just to like tell you that, because I am imagining that a large portion, if not most of the people in the audience that listens to me is aware of this concept. Maybe you haven't heard the phrase "the dose makes the poison," but the thing that I've noticed that is true for even folks that work in healthcare is, though we understand that it doesn't work to have that kind of black and white thinking around, say, a medicine or another kind of substance or chemical, we do think that it is true for other things in our life, right? Like, you hear expressions about like a toxic workplace, a toxic coworker, and this is an understandable phrase. I'm not shaming that this phrase exists, of course, but one of the things to explore is, could it be true for you that either a situation, an activity, a person in your life that you're viewing as toxic, as harmful in some way, could it be true that the dose makes the poison? And particularly related to how much you're working. I'm almost halfway into my Creating Space coaching program, group program that I am like intensely loving offering to the wonderful healthcare humans who are inside of it. Hello, if you're inside of it, I love you. You are doing amazing. And a lot of the conversations in that group, and a lot of conversations I've been having recently with patients or colleagues or whatever, is about creating space in your life for humanity, right? Your humanity. And the flip of that is, if you're creating space in your schedule, in your brain, in your to-do list for you, a bit of that is that you're going to be titrating down the dose of your work, the intensity of how you are working, and certainly likely the amount that you are working, right? And so that's my main question to you is it possible that something that you, your body, your nervous system is viewing as absolutely toxic and dangerous to you, is there another dose of that, a smaller amount of that, that actually does feel no longer toxic or dangerous to you? Knowing there's, I mean, some individuals or situations that will just, you know, if you walk into a, I don't know, radioactive nuclear plant that's melting down, very, very small amount of that, and already you're going to have issues, right? So it's not, there's some settings where it's going to become harmful to your body or your mind very quickly, for sure. Some people in your life, it may be literally the dose of that person that you could tolerate is zero. 0 milligrams, 0 milliseconds spent in their presence. And that's beautiful to know. That's important to know. And for a lot of other people, you know, we could do this with people and with places where it's either good or it's evil. You know, either it's wonderful or it's terrible. But what if it's about finding the right dose? I've learned, certainly with like relationships in my life, like I am able to hold capacity and space for love and care and connection in my body for certain, you know, whether it's members of my family or friends, when I am seeing them with a certain frequency or less, versus if I'm, say, like spending a week with them nonstop, the dose may turn into a poisonous dose in terms of my ability to enjoy their company. Can you relate? Right? So same with like, whether it's coworkers, people on your team, could it be that either shifting just the frequency that you're seeing that person, or even just considering like the ways in which you're interacting with this person, could they be done in a way that seems to respect your nervous system, your mind, what comes up for you when you're in their presence, you know, in a way that leads your interactions to feel less like poisonous or harmful or activating or aggravating to you? The way you will know is by really tuning into your body or your nervous system. Like, so I'm going to give you some examples of how you could start to understand if the dose of a workplace, a work task, a colleague, even other things like certain foods, certain activities like social media, like for all of these variety of substances, you could say, that your body interacts with, the way you will know if you're having too much of them is by tuning into your body. For some of us, that's hard. So I'll also kind of give you an option if you are quite mind or thought focused, where it's like looking at the quality of the dialogue you notice in your head, the quality of like judgmental, irritable, frustrated thoughts you're having versus peaceful thoughts, expansive thoughts, right? And if you are comfortable checking in with your body before, even perhaps during, depending, and certainly after interaction with that social media app, with that colleague, with that work setting, and noticing that external factors impact on your body, right? So I want to give some like practical examples from my life just to help illustrate this. So one that is actually more like specifically a chemical substance is caffeine, right? So, you know, you hear people sort of say colloquially like, oh, caffeine's so bad for you, or I love caffeine, you know, again, so that black and white thinking, is caffeine healthy for me or not? And I think most listening know there is, that's not an answer. Like, it depends is the answer. And the further part of it depends, I like to think it's like the dose makes the poison, right? So for me, what I learned is if I was consuming in some way caffeine on a daily basis, and certainly the amount I was drinking, which was like maybe a teapot's worth of very strongly brewed Earl Grey tea most days, there was a while in which I found it beneficial, though I noticed its side effects. You know, so when I was up many times a night with a baby, I noticed that I appreciated the wakefulness quality and the alertness that it gave me. And I noticed that I felt pretty like shaky. I also noticed if I tried to say drink the amount of caffeine that would be in like a caffeinated beverage or coffee, that I would be so alert that I'd get palpitations and sweaty, and it wouldn't be worth the side effects, which you could say is sort of the poison, right? And as my life changed, as I regularly got a full night's sleep most of the time, because my kids don't wake me up and I'm thankful for that, you know, I was still routinely, just because I was in the habit of it, of drinking, I guess the equivalent of like 2 to 3 cups of like strongly brewed black tea every day, and was noticing that, I wasn't even necessarily noticing if that was the problem or not, but I was curious what would happen if I didn't consume caffeine. I have a whole podcast that's specifically about this caffeine one, so I'll just to sum up. So I tried an experiment where I stopped the caffeine, and I learned, first of all, my like baseline level of anxiety is completely different, much lower off of caffeine. It is wild. It is wild how much less something I used to call anxiety, and it felt like anxiety, and my brain would interpret it as anxiety, and my mind would race with anxiety, literally less now that I don't have caffeine. I don't think that's going to have the same result for everyone. Each of these examples I'm giving is very not prescriptive, very descriptive of my experience, to illustrate the point of what if you were doing these dose titration experiments in your life, right? So for a while, I kind of treated caffeine as if it was poison and was just like, I'm not drinking it at all. And since then, I've started to experiment with like, well, what if I have like a weekly brewed cup of, how is green tea for me versus black tea? And I've noticed overall, most of the time, I still don't prefer the effects it has on my body. It just feels like it's too jittery. I feel some of that anxiety come back. I don't think it's poison, but I do notice it has unwelcome effects on my body, and so I mostly don't drink it. Another kind of dietary related one that I've been very aggrieved to learn is that lots of kinds of dairy now give me too much heartburn, and so I have noticed I am not allergic to dairy. I don't even know if it counts as lactose intolerance, and I don't really care, but I noticed that once I stopped having ice cream and even instead just have like a dairy-free kind of cold dessert, and same with I stopped drinking like milk and instead switched to like soy or like a non-dairy form of milk, I noticed my stomach had completely different signals. And so in that case, still though, I can still ingest like small amounts of cheese, like things that have a dairy substance like baked into them, and I'm not noticing the same thing. So again, sort of the dose makes the poison, and I continue to experiment with like how much I can have on one day versus another, what feels like it works for me, right? Social media, another great example where really the dose that makes the poison also depends on the emotional state I'm bringing to checking my social media and like my capacity for that day. So when I'm really like tired and low on capacity, I have a tendency to want to check social media more and to be looking at the apps to try and like stimulate, like, you know, it was like a replacement caffeine basically. And I've noticed that it doesn't pay dividends. I end up just drained or more distracted, less energy and on like time, because I'm spending time on the apps instead of, you know, focusing on whatever it is I want to do or simply resting. So when I've taken out, you know, scrolling on social media a bunch and instead put in more like naps or lying down, including at work, I have been napping at work more often these past few months than I've ever dared to before. I didn't think you could nap at work, but I just like go into the patient room, turn off the lights over lunch, and like set my timer for like somewhere between 10 and 30 minutes. I may or may not fall asleep. But speaking of something that I have not found a poisonous amount of that dose, replacing social media with naps has net overall been a beneficial thing. And there's some days where, you know, I am full of energy, I feel settled in my nervous system, and I'm curious about something, I'm wanting to connect about something online. And then I find that the dosing of social media like acts differently on my body. I'm not feeling like all consumed, edgy, and drained when I leave the app. I'm feeling kind of like fueled and celebratory, right? So the dose of social media in some ways depends on, that is like poisonous, if you will, or not for me, is really context specific. And the only way I know all of that is by doing some experimentation, including doing a bit of a social media fast where I like deleted all my apps and just noticed what I felt like for a couple of weeks without it. It's interesting. It's sort of like an elimination diet, right? And then, so now, like turning to work, right? I actually do this a lot, and depending on what you practice, you may be doing it a lot, not realizing, but we do this a lot with patients. Workplace specifically, like the number of people that I've done sort of basically experimentation on if they can find a dose of their work that their body will accept, you know, having them off on some kind of stress leave where it's exacerbated their mental health to the point where they cannot work. They're off work for some time, which is, you could say, the elimination diet part. And then we titrate back in, you know, graduated hours or graduated duties. And sometimes they've recovered and they're at a point where they can go back to the full dose of their job as before. It depends on many, many factors, of course. But there are a solid number of people where really it's about finding better boundaries around what they're doing and certainly how much they're doing, and shifting their relationship to their work so that it's not consuming so much of their life, i.e. titrating down the dose to a dose of work that their body has capacity for, and therefore isn't showing signs of like burnout and overwhelm and stress, which you could say is like the toxic, poisonous amount of work. Yeah. I find that when people come to me and they talk about, you know, like creating capacity, honoring their capacity, and therefore working less, they want to qualify because like, but I love my work. How could I give it up? They need me and I feel important and I love it. And so that's the thing. It's about titrating your work to a level where you can simply love it without having all of the side effects of excess, similar to, depending on your relationship with alcohol, some people can have a certain amount of alcohol and it's just a good time and just a delicious beverage. But beyond that, you may still say you're loving alcohol, but it's causing more havoc in your life. And for some people, that amount is zero too, right? Like everyone is different. So if you're someone who's listening and you've been in a space of like, should I leave my job or not? Is this workplace toxic for me and I've got to go or not? Is this coworker, the staff member, toxic or not? Consider before you decide to leave altogether, which is also a wonderful option. I'm not against that. But also, you may find that if you simply, not easily, but simply, titrate down the amount of exposure you have to this workplace, this coworker, this staff member, that you come to a completely different experience of it, where you can reclaim what felt good about it, what was satisfying about it, without having the side effects of it becoming at a poisonous level, you know? And for people who say like, I could never work less, I love it too much, and I'm so needed and it's so important. I mean, there's so many examples like of things that are good for you, that are important, that are needed, that you can absolutely do to such excess that you cause harm to yourself, right? We know that like exercise, there's a version of a kind of eating disorder that is specifically over-exercising, right? I'm aware of a few patients who, and like cases that I've heard, where they have drank so much water, which is supposed to be like, always drink more water. Water is good for you. You are healthy if you drink lots of water. That is true to a point, but beyond that point, the dose makes the poison, and drinking an extreme excess of water is very dangerous for your body, causes electrolyte abnormalities, etc. I have witnessed the physical impacts of drinking excess amount of water, right? So it's not about the thing being good or bad. It's about the dose of it. And is that dose of that person, that place, that activity, are you noticing, is your body telling you that it might be time to titrate that dose? Going in the other direction as well, are you underdosing things in your life that you notice your body is craving more of? Whether it's things like sleep, whether it is certain food groups that you notice that you generally feel better if you have or not, And this is not any kind of diet culture thing here, honey. Like, I'm not doing any of that. Sometimes it's like, I actually, my body's craving more chocolate and it's happier with it, right? Like, it's not necessarily fruits and vegetables. Everyone's different, right? It's not about things being good or bad. That's kind of the whole point. It's about what are you sensing that your body is craving more of that you might, because of how your life is set up, be underdosing. And in order to make space for that, what are you definitely noticing you're having overdoses of your life? Family members, relationships, workplaces, even work tasks. You love your job, but you're doing way too much forms. Can you titrate down the dose of that to find a happy amount of forms in your life? I've certainly done that. I've delegated forms away completely, and that was like my elimination period. And then the staff member that we trained to do that went on that leave. And now I do some amount of forms, and some amount of forms are done by other staff members. And I'm at a balance where I'm realizing, okay, forms are not actually totally toxic. They're not my favorite. And I now have a mechanism to help share the load of them so it's never to such excess that I'm feeling like it's a toxic, poisonous amount for my body. The other thing about forms is, like, say a bunch come in and some amount of them have fallen to me, or I'm choosing to do them. I space out when I do them at a pace that feels good for my nervous system as well, which means sometimes I definitely don't get to them right away. And that's okay, because the pace that I can pace is a kind of dosing, isn't it? Pacing yourself about the amount and the time you're taking to do certain tasks is a way of spreading out the dose of how that task has an impact on your body. And that can make a huge difference, can't it? So yeah, I think, I mean, that was the main concept. It's probably a bit of a shorter one, and hopefully that's okay. I hope it's been helpful to even just hear the term, the dose makes the poison, if you've never heard that before. The reason I thought to do this podcast now is I explained this concept to a patient earlier who was worried about a certain medicine that someone they knew was taking, and they were sort of like, because this kind of medicine is just bad and evil. And I was like, actually, have you heard the expression, the dose makes the poison? And I explained it to them, and I think they got it. I'm not sure. Sometimes I do my TED Talks, and they're like, great, I'm still terrified because I've read things on the internet, but I think she landed it, which I hope was helpful. And in any case, I'm hoping it's helpful for you to know that term, even just for, you know, medical education for yourself. And my invitation to you is to consider, what experiments do you want to be practicing, especially over this time period? Like, I'm recording this in early December. This is a time period where a lot of things are you could possibly do in excess, and the demands of your time and attention are in excess, including things that are meant to be fun, meant to be joyous, meant to be meaningful. And that can be stressful too, by the way, of like, oh my gosh, I have to go to fun. It's like all of these things are so special and fun. All the special traditions we always do, the special parties, the special family and friend get-togethers. But you're recognizing, even though those are all fun, the dose of them is in excess. It means you're not sleeping, or you're actually feeling crappy. So would you want to titrate those down to a level where you actually get to have a good time in December, in every month? And why not in December? You know, when, you know, it's technically, according to one song, the most wonderful time of year. And same with work. It's like, okay, well, how much work do I wish to fit in between all of this fun I'm potentially having? That feels like an amount within my capacity, an amount that my body will not be poisoned by. Certainly family members and family obligations, and even like the tasks you give yourself, how much you decorate, how much you spend, how many presents you get for everyone. If it's feeling like a toxic, poisonous amount, what happens if you simply reduce the amount of some of those things? Does any of it actually feel lighter, easier, better? It's simply a question I'm inviting you to ponder, especially whatever feels the most toxic, the most overloaded, the most overdosed part of your life. How could you do an experiment of even just titrating down a little bit, a couple less patients per day, a couple less tasks on your list per day, whatever it is? And do you notice an impact on your nervous system, on your mind, on your body, in titrating down the dose to less than poisonous amounts? All right. Well, with that, I'm almost at my kids' school, so I think I'm going to sign off. And yeah, I'll talk to you next time. Hello, healthcare humans. You thought the podcast was over, but then days later, I am still the only human driving in the van. And I was just having a conversation with a lovely healthcare human that I support. And it kind of unlocked this whole other way that we can also use the dose makes a point, makes the poison. And it's as an antidote to anyone who listens to this podcast who is worried that they are too much, or actually, as a flip, not enough. So, I swear this still applies to the dose makes a poison concept. But now, so like the first half of this podcast was me using the analogy of the dose makes a poison to illustrate the ways in which we think of external factors and other people as poisonous or toxic towards us, right? Or even things that we think are really good for us. Just illustrating the notion that it's about the dose of those things that makes them harmful or helpful to us, right? So there's this other whole way that we think about things being bad or good, harmful or helpful, and that's looking at ourselves. And I don't know about you, but I have an old story and old pattern of worrying I either wasn't enough, which would be, you could say, underdose or like not good. So bad because I wasn't enough, I wasn't effective, I wasn't useful. Or too much, especially these days as I'm taking up more space, as I'm, you know, doing more public speaking and actually being a more authentic version of myself and really connecting with and expressing what I'm authentically feeling and thinking, I am noticing I frequently have a worry that I am too much for people. And it's just interesting to think of that still through this lens of the dose makes the poison, because in some ways that black and white shame thinking, right? The not enough is like, oh, I'm like not effective. So if we use a sort of a medication metaphor, it would be as if a pill, you know, someone took a pill and it didn't actually cure the disease. And that pill felt shame of like, oh, I wasn't enough to cure the disease, you know? And then another little pill was swallowed by someone that actually hurt them or killed them. And it's like, oh, I was too much. I killed them. So like we're viewing ourselves in a similar way. Like, first of all, that the core of our being only gets to, we only get to decide the value of the core of our being based on how we interact with the world. Like we are only as good as much as we can help other people. We are only as good as how little we harm other people. I would like to just say, like, let's take our goodness off the table and instead just understand, like, we are who we are. Joan is who Joan is, right? That is the essence of who I am. There's the Joan chemical, the Joan drug, the Joan herb and spice, if you want to use like a food metaphor instead. There's the Joan flavor that is who I am. And the question of, is that good or bad? Is that too much or not enough? Is irrelevant because it depends on the context. And so I don't have to be worried about fixing or changing or hiding parts of myself. And I can still get curious about the dose of me and the impact it has on other people, right? Not in a way where I'm in any way judging myself as bad or poisonous ever. I am who I am. And I don't know if you've noticed, but like different humans, you know, they have their own nervous systems, their own lived experiences, their own history, their own capacity. So I can say the same statement with the same tone and inflection, the same amount of energy to three different people. And I will notice, and they may even report back to me, that they have completely different reactions to the statement I shared. So is it that I take the average of those and decide if I'm a good or bad person? Or is it that I'm who I am and I choose to believe I am good? I choose to believe everyone is good inside. And I can still get information from the way that they've reacted. And as much as this is within my capacity or desire, I can titrate the dose of me to see if that impacts how effectively I can connect with that person, right? I mean, we're doing this subconsciously all the time, right? Like I walk into one room with one patient and I shift my energy based on what I'm perceiving the other person's energy is. So there may be some people, you know, a little baby walk in the room and I'm like, hello, look at you, you little cutie or whatever, right? Like I'm like going for it. That's not the energy, vibe, or, you know, tone of voice I'm using when I walk into the room with like my depressed teen. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? I am still, honestly, finding how to titrate the dose of me to connect with the depressed teens. Because, like, my default is like being Amy Poehler from Mean Girls and being like, I'm not a regular doctor, I'm a cool doctor. And like, that rarely actually works, but at least it makes me laugh. Anyway, so in any case, like, we're doing things like this all the time, right? And so I just want to offer that to you. And there's a way in which it's like, is this people pleasing? Is this wearing a different mask for different people? Not in the way I am describing it. In the way I'm describing it, we don't have to be hiding ourselves. We don't have to be pretending to be other people. We can be fully ourselves and recognize that different expressions, amounts, doses, you could say, including like time-based doses of ourselves, could at times exceed the emotional, social capacity of another person, right? I think about my siblings, the family members, even my kids, and like, my husband say, like, I may be in the mood to talk about a topic with him for an hour, but if he is exhausted, like, I'm going to at some point become, you could say, poisonous in terms of like overstaying my welcome in his awareness and his nervous system, right? That doesn't mean I'm bad. It doesn't mean that he's bad. It doesn't mean that we failed as in a relationship. It just means like the dose of how much energy I want to put out is a mismatch for the amount, his capacity to receive that energy. It's fine. And so I could then say, okay, well, I still want to express this and then go talk to someone else about it. And then he gets to have his time with his energy and capacity, right? There's some people that you really would have the capacity and enjoy spending an entire week with on vacation. And we all know it can like totally break some relationships or friendships because you realize, ooh, we are now at poisonous doses of each other. And people, so instead of saying that though, people are like, I discovered they're a terrible person. I hate them now. But like, what if it's just simply the dose of them exceeded your tolerance, right? We use this in a way where it's shady, where it's like, I can tolerate that person in small doses. And we say that as if that's like means something bad about them. But what if actually that's just extremely wise and a wonderful way to understand our capacities, our sensitivities, our historical lived experience, which makes certain people more or less likely to cause reactions in us, right? There's the layer in which we can shift our story about people, etc. And in the meantime, while our socialized and like very much like nervous system conditioned stories live in us about, the way that one colleague speaks and how it reminds us of our critical mother, very fictional example, I promise. Right? It's okay if it's like, one of the kindest things I can do is expose myself to that individual in smaller doses, right? That's like the whole first half of this conversation. So the flip side is remembering that you are another person. You are never poison. Perhaps the dose of you could be, I'm going to say poison, or like the dose of you could notice that the one patient or your child is shutting down. They're not listening to you anymore. You've exceeded their capacity to connect with you or to listen to you, right? Or to be in your energy, like whatever way it makes sense, right? What if that's fine? What if there's wisdom in that? Especially if it stops you from thinking that you, in your essence, are bad, toxic, too much. No. What if it's just that for some people, they can only tolerate you in small doses? And what if that has nothing to do with you and not anything to do with them in terms of them being bad people, but like that's just useful to know. So now you're not trying to like overdose them more to make them finally like you and then noticing it seeming to backfire. You can give your energy, keep your energy for yourself, and then offer it and notice who has capacity and interest and sort of alignment to actually receive it and enjoy it. And then you can feed off each other and who doesn't. And neither of those are bad. It's just like a useful way to view the world. So there you go. There is yet another way of how to use the dose makes the poison metaphor. Looking at you, looking at your, especially if it's a way to combat internalized stories you have about yourself that you're just fundamentally unlovable, not valuable, toxic poison. You have to hide the evil, sinful parts of yourself because they're going to be contagious and like catch to other people. What if none of that is true? And it, you know, sometimes you can just be like, I'm wonderful, I'm lovable, I'm love and light in the world, and just like expansive towards everyone. But like, first of all, that's hard to hold in our bodies to be, go to the complete opposite. So some ways the dose makes the poison is like kind of like a bridge story to get there. And in some ways it's more of an accurate story. Like you can still fundamentally believe you are love and you're light and you're wonderful. Cause I believe that about you. And I believe that about myself. And that still doesn't mean that the flavor that is Joan is going to be beneficial to every single person on every single day in every single capacity that they hold for an unending amount of time, you know? So it's okay. I can really enjoy and savor my flavor and what I'm bringing to the table. And I can notice the impact that, you know, the energy I'm bringing, the way I'm acting has on other people, and do some experimentation of like, so if I titrate the dose with this person, can I find a dose of still authentic me, but can I find the flavor and slice of that dose that opens up space to connect with this person, understanding that we don't immediately have a match, a flavor match, a energy match, right? There's so much richness in that. I think what I'm saying, if you think about it, just every person that you see on a regular basis and how we do shift our energy, shift our tone, shift the topics we choose to bring up as we speak to different people, there's a way in which that can become people-pleasing where we abandon ourselves and we just like listen for and try and mirror back what they want to hear. But there's a version of it that's not people-pleasing where we're still like rooted in ourselves, but we are doing this dance of like finding the avenues of connection and bridges with other people. And so we could say one way to say that is titrating the dose of ourselves and the formulation of ourselves to see if we can find a therapeutic bridge with other people. And that's just what's happening anyway. So it's kind of neat to notice it, and especially to view it in a way where it's not like anyone has to be bad or good. Anyone has to be toxic or non-toxic for like, I am not going to be good for everyone in that way. Right? Like I'm going to do my best, and I am sort of on a mission, and I have a curiosity is, could I find a way to titrate, still hold on to myself and still very much be rooted in who I am and not be just like fawning and mirroring back other people, like still hold on to myself, but find a version of that that can form a connection with like the wide expanse of humanity. I'm curious about that. It's a useful skill for our jobs because we serve the wide expanse of humanity. So it's been quite a, often quite delightful mission to be like, how can I connect with this 95-year-old former trucker? And how can I connect with this 7-year-old extremely shy? Like whatever, like it's so neat to do that. And it's neat to think of it as a way of like titrating versions of myself to do it versus like acting as different people to do it, you know? And not thinking that I have to say that that fundamentally I am good or bad in the process. Even if, you know, I do an experiment and I give a certain amount and dose of my flavor to a patient and there's a really like not great reaction back, that doesn't mean I'm now bad or I should hide myself next time. It's just like, okay, so that particular dose on that particular day wasn't quite it. So what can we try next time? You know? So there you go. There's one final way to use the dose makes the poison. Especially if you are worried that you are too much or not enough. What if that's not true fundamentally to you as a person, but what if that could be potentially true in a certain situation where the dose of you was too much for them, and that's really about them and their capacity and not actually about you at all. But it could be interesting information if you do plan on interacting with that human in the future, right? In a way that's not based in shame, but is based on understanding how humans work. All right. That's enough ghost talk for one day. This is finally the actual end of the podcast. Thank you all for listening as always. And I'll talk to you next week. I would love to take this work deeper with you. Visit joanchanmd.com today and discover my growing menu of options for restorative medical education to suit your learning needs. I offer one-on-one coaching, customized workshops,
and self-study courses that allow you to connect not only with my work on a deeper level, but also with other healthcare humans just like you. So if you want to start humanizing your work in healthcare to a deeper level and do it in community with others, please visit joanchanmd.com and find those options and what fits you and your life today.